Welcome to the Spin Axis Podcast. I'm Eric Barzeski.
I'm Jason Nickel.
I'm Tyson Deskins.
I'm Mike Renato, the Athletic Motion Golf.
Today we're going to talk about, a long time ago I was helped Dave Wedzik open the first Second Tilt Academy in the world, 2009-2010. One of the things I liked about it at the time, I've since shifted and moved on, no pun intended, and one of the things I liked about it at the time was the idea that we would be looking at the commonalities of the game's best players and helping golfers achieve more of those things over what the game's worst players tend to do, or amateur golfers in general. What better person to have on to discuss some of the commonalities of the game's best players within the context of what Stack and Tilt still espouses to this day than Mike Renato, because we have the tools like 3D, right? Mike and I have gear systems. All of us on the call have force plates, and you guys are obviously familiar with,
for sure,
3D as well. So we wanted to just get into the first one. We have four topics that we're going to talk about. The first and most obvious one to me is a lateral pelvis shift, or a lateral shift or sway off the golf ball. It used to be that you made a very, very centered pivot and nothing went back to the right. The game's best players didn't do this according to Stack and Tilt. Currently, it's that your pelvis starts a little bit forward and then moves a little bit forward. I think I've seen videos where they claim that that's your center that they're talking about. Mike, what does the data say that the game's best players tend to do?
Oh, there's a clear shift off the ball with their weight and mass and pelvis. Like, it's clear as day.
Yeah.
And I question where, because I've heard him recently say, and I don't know if this has always been that way or not, that now the weight shift is just the center of the pelvis, which is kind of a bizarre way to think of weight of a golf swing, is just to adjust the pelvis where the pelvis location is. So it's a little, there's a lot of liberties taken there now with how weight has morphed into just where the pelvis is moving. But it clearly, even the pelvis moves inches off the ball.
Right. And to be clear, we can't really measure weight in a dynamic, meaning moving, system. We can't really measure the weight of a moving thing, because weight is kind of a static measurement. We're relying on gravity alone. Yep. If you're moving around, you're measuring forces or pressure, right? It's a bit pedantic, but I like to call them forces. But when you say pressure, everyone knows what you're talking about. Pressure is force over area, but whatever. Okay, we'll leave that to the side for now. But when I first bought those two bathroom scales, like week one of being an academy that I was a part of in early 2010, okay, I would stand there and just move my arms to the right, and clearly my weight went to the right. I'm a right-handed golfer. My weight went to my trail side. Okay, just moving my arms shifted my weight 60-40. Just moving that. The fact that our chest is in front of our spine, if we turn around our spine, to be pedantic, I hate that phrase too, because our spine turns as well. But if we turn around the axis of our spine, our rib cage goes to the right also. So if we're making a centered pivot, the front of our face, our head, literally can go to the right a little bit. There's a lot of stuff going to the right. I had to make some very comical swings to achieve 50-50 or 60-40 forward. I made an 80-20 swing because in the DVDs, they showed, I believe it was Troy Madison, 80-20 forward at the top of his backswing, right? So I had to make some ridiculous looking swings, trying to keep my head somewhere near where it started to get any of those numbers, including even 50-50. And so, yes, on gears, we see almost all of the game's best players move their pelvis, 1 to 4 inches is a pretty common range for irons, mid irons. Would you agree with that?
Yeah, we always just say kind of a golf ball. So about 1.5, roughly 2 inches. Some players are, yeah, but it always moves over, for sure.
Mm-hmm. How about the upper center?
Yeah, it moves as well. I mean, the whole thing moves. Like you were saying, it's like,
yep,
where you're marking, because the spine is not in the center of the body, where you're marking or where you're measuring from, there's a shift away from the ball. It's like, try to do that, like what you did, and we've done this a number of times. It is such a cartoonish movement to have him either not move, or certainly if they move towards the target in the backswing.
Well, and guys, would you agree? Because I see this every day on my lesson tee, where I have players who are trying not to move those two bubbles, their upper center and their lower center. And
you
then
can call them grapes. He knows James like this. Yeah, yeah.
I call them bubbles. I've called them bubbles. I don't know why. And, you know, I know James calls them grapes. But like, we see those two things where they're trying to make a golf swing where they don't move. And then the pelvis sways about 5 inches to the right in the backswing, and the upper center starts tilting towards the front or towards a target. And the whole time that player is actually trying not to move them, right? But because they tried to restrict that movement, they're actually not able to make a functional pivot in their swing. I mean, I think we all probably see that pretty often.
Yeah, it's always interesting seeing players, because no one comes in that I can recall recently, especially saying they're trying to shift off. It's still kind of like, you know, yes, bad language in the golf swing. So they're trying to have a centered pivot. And not once is it ever centered, ever.
Never.
How long do they stay on the trail side? Right? Because Sag and Tilt might say, and we've been in discussions where they've shown someone at the top and they'll say, look, he's 0.6 inches forward of where he started at address. Sometimes those numbers aren't necessarily actually 1 inch forward or 0.6 inches forward because they don't know quite how that gears capture was done and when, where the player was shifted already, perhaps before the capture started. Mm-hmm. But when does the player recenter, to use your word, or move forward of where they started, move forward of zero in most players?
The most common that we see is once the club is swinging away from the target, and like when the club head is the farthest away from the target, that's typically when the player, good players we're talking about, is the farthest away. And then as that club swings up to vertical, it's kind of like, okay, they're starting now to fall with the club back towards the target. That's the most.
But they're still on the trail side until they get to almost the top of the backswing. Yes.
Now this goes into, okay, if you just look at that pelvis sway number on gears, you know, it's got the bubble and then the line down it and the numbers on it. But you take a player like Rory, I think everyone's probably listening to this has probably seen his gears capture. I always use the center of the ankles, which you can get on gears. Let's say Rory's center of the ankles are 19 inches apart. Let's say 20 for easy math. So if that line was dead in the middle, 10 inches from his left ankle, 10 inches from his right ankle, that would be his center. I think hopefully we can all agree if our center of mass is over that center of the stance, that's a pretty centered position.
Yeah.
His gears capture starts when he's way to the right because the capture when the club moves first. Mm-hmm. When he's way to the right of that, he recenters back to that way to the right position by the time he gets to the top. He doesn't actually get back to his center between his stance until in the downswing because he has such a big shift off the ball.
Yeah. He presses forward and then shifts off the ball pretty dramatically, right?
Yep.
Especially with a driver.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's one of those guys in the 4+ inch range almost of actual shift.
He gets it over there.
Yeah. And he's still shifted away from the ball at the top of the backswing, less than 4 inches, but still back there some. I like my players. I don't care if they're within roughly an inch of being in the center, so long as they have what I call kind of just momentum forward.
Exactly.
At the top of the backswing. Yeah. Right. You shift back, you shift away. If you're a baseball pitcher, you rear back, you go forward, right? Almost every athletic motion that we make in golf, to use your name, right, involves some back to load up and store a little bit more energy so that we can transfer it in the other direction.
Absolutely.
Okay. So clear as day, a lot of numbers. You almost never see a good player stay perfectly centered or go forward very early in the backswing. Okay. And the ones that do it really late and they end up going back and then forward just a little bit earlier than some others. The next thing, and this is a bit of all things, but it ties in a lot of things. Elbow bend, hand path, adduction and abduction. You guys just did a video on this. We'll probably try to link to that in the show notes for those of you on your phones or whatever your podcast player is. You should be able to click the link. They're all tied together. I'll talk as a righty. If you bend your right arm a lot, if you bend your right elbow a lot, you're going to tend to lower your right arm. You're going to tend to pull your left arm farther across your chest, especially if you like to keep your left arm straight-ish, not bending it too much. It's going to pull your right arm around to the side of your body too much, right? I say beside or behind you, okay? Off the top of the thing, I mean, Tyson, Jason, everybody here knows this. The game's best players tend not to bend their elbow nearly as much as
for sure
bad players. You see a lot of players, the highest number I've ever had for elbow bend, and you can't do it much more than that because literally your flesh gets in the way of your bones. I had a guy bend his right elbow 150 degrees.
That's a really subtle humble brag, by the way. I can't go past 90. Uh-huh.
Okay. But 150 degrees of elbow bend, you will not find a tour player who has 150 degrees of elbow bend.
We are
the common number. What would Tyson and Jason, what would you guess on gears? Just a range or an average?
87.
I mean, I think a lot, like what, 70? You know, obviously it's less than 90. I would say, I don't know what the average is. You guys know that way better than I do. From, I always get confused too with some of the gears measurements because it's almost backwards and I don't,
yeah,
I don't do math.
It's gears is measuring the amount of bend, right? Yeah. Not the angle between those segments. So, Mike, what's the range that we typically see?
I mean, if you look at a player like Rory, what is he on the top of your head? Is he 70s somewhere in there?
He's 70 in one swing. He's 58 in another. He's actually a little bit less with a driver. He's like 65.
Most guys fall in around that 90 range.
A lot of people are a little bit less than 90. A lot of the older school players are a little bit more than 90, and then the newer, younger players tend to be a little bit less than 90.
They're getting wider and wider.
Yeah. I did a chart where I plotted elbow bend versus amount of adduction and abduction and stuff, and it was a lot of the older guys were in the top left part of the chart, and a lot of the younger guys were in the bottom right part of the chart. They're very much tied together. How much you bend your elbow tends to affect how much adduction and abduction you have.
For sure.
The lead arm. You guys did a video on this that I cite fairly often as a general concept about how the average amateur is trying to do more work in the golf swing in the same amount of time as the professional golfer. And in the video I'm talking about, you were talking about the adduction of the lead arm across the chest. And you said, for example, a tour player might go from 80 to 60 and then back to 80 in the 0.2 to 0.25 seconds of a downswing, whereas the average amateur is pulling their arm across their chest 40 degrees, and they have the same 0.2 to 0.25 seconds to get their arm 40 degrees back across their chest.
Yeah.
And we wonder why we have so many people with their hands in 2D way behind their trail hip, flipping at the ball to try to get the ground before they miss everything.
Yeah. Yeah, this is a tough one for players to kind of wrap their heads around, especially like some players just think better with the right arm. Some players think better with the left arm. It's really kind of a 50-50 as far as that goes. What we found is that right-handed golfers are typically right-hand dominant, and that it's that hand that tends to goof up that number more than the lead arm. So we don't talk too much about the lead arm much anymore, because most of our golfers are right-handed. And when we do, it will be, you see a lot of this movement. So you see a lot of that kind of elbow hike, abduction, abduction that goes across in an attempt to just keep this arm straight.
Yeah.
Right? When this arm stays straight, they'll kind of use it as a substitute for turn to kind of produce a fake good number with the left arm, abduction-wise.
Yep.
But it's the right that tends to goof up mostly for right arm dominant or the left-handed golfers. But it's a really interesting topic, especially given some of the recent talk about abduction and how that produces. I've got some pretty cool numbers here on the screen behind me that we can get into if you're interested in it.
Yeah, go for it.
Well, let's first say, you know, one of the things now that's being discussed is, like, if I square to this camera, my shoulders obviously are perpendicular to the camera. So just a line come out of our shoulders, like you're familiar with the gears. The arm, and when we say arm, we're just talking shoulder to elbow, right? Forget what the forearm's doing right now, just shoulder to elbow. It's said in a recent video that golfers generate speed by just pulling that arm in line with the shoulder line and then rapidly. So it's kind of like doing this motion. I don't know if you can see it, this motion.
We're an audio only podcast, but basically moving your arm way to your side and then way across your chest.
Yeah. Kind of like taking it behind you, pulling it back in front of you, taking it behind you, pull it back in front of you. That is the farthest thing from reality that I have ever heard in the golf. Like bananas, to the point where I stayed up to about 4 o'clock one morning, just going through any sport I could think of. I have my kind of weird brain. Look at boxing, right? Doesn't happen in boxing. Golfers or boxers don't hit other boxers by that's all on that one side of the body. Only, I mean, if you want to call it a sport, the only activity I found that comes close to that was pillow fighting.
Okay.
That's fantastic.
Which you can extrapolate some of the distance issues, right? I'm pillow fighting like this. That was it. That's all I could find.
Yep. You sent me a video of someone doing the slap fighting thing.
The slap thing, I thought, well, surely they're going to be slapped. No, they've got that body out in front and that arm so far behind them when they contact the other person's face. Still doesn't happen in slap. Pillow fighting's about it. If you want a pillow fight, get that motion going.
All right, pillow fighting.
Get a pillow fighter gears.
But that's not right. As far as the numbers go, so we got one of the longest players that we have in the database, probably the longest player that we've captured since the hybrid system came out. So you get really good arm numbers. Top 10 in PGA Tour driving. I think every year he's been on tour. So at the top of his swing, and then this, I've just got a 7-iron up. he's abducted. Well, I'll take you an address so you can kind of see the whole story. So what address, everyone has some amount of AD deduction, right? The arms are typically somewhere in front of the body. He's 12 degrees.
They're squeezed into the middle a little bit.
Yeah, exactly.
Yep.
At the top, he goes from 12 inward to 14 outward, the top. So it's 26 degrees of movement that way. At impact, what do you think he is at impact? Just abduction-wise. Again, very fast golf. He was doing 130 in the indoors like it was...
I'll let Tyson Jates answer. What do you think? He's 14 at the top, right, Mike? Abduction, AB?
14 AB at the top.
Okay.
Man, I would say, does he get close to back where he started? I mean, would it not be...
Think about where the chest is.
Okay, so yeah, the chest is more open.
Impact.
So, yeah, again, I don't have a good guess here.
I'll give you a hint. He ain't pillow fighting.
No, he's not.
He's 20 degrees abducted. He's more abducted at impact than he is at the top of his swing.
So it stays behind. Yeah.
It moved further behind.
Yes.
Yep. This is not how good players generate speed.
It doesn't move across.
It just doesn't
move across through the strike.
How am I gonna swing that alignment stick really fast in front of me?
Swashbuckling.
Yeah. Instead of an alignment stick, use a pillow.
I want to see that alignment stick drill done with two hands on it. I want to see how that looks. Mm.
Yeah, your left arm, if you put your left arm on the club, it literally doesn't reach over there that far. You can't move the right arm that far around you.
There you go. Humble bragging again with the tech size.
Okay.
Which way is the
room? It's not a good thing that I can do this. It's not a good thing that I can move my left arm to 0 degrees across my chest. Trust me. You know, the arm swing illusion is very real for me. It's not my favorite thing. Barrel-chested guys have no problems keeping their hands in front of their chest because they have no other choice. There's a lot there in that, you know. It goes to the amount of lifting that tour players do. The average tour player lifts their elbows or their trail humerus 10 to 30 degrees.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Gets up there.
All that stuff goes together. If you're overbending your elbow, if you're trying to do hands in.
I was just going
to
say,
hands in, to me, is hands around and hands lowering with the lead arm lowering or the trail arm lowering. Sorry.
I was at Mike and Sean's for the PGA show, and they you guys talked about this at your coaches summit, where like that hands in is, you know, that's not when you measure good players. Their hands aren't actually working in off the golf ball when you measure it.
No.
Regardless of what it looks like.
They do check in because your chest rotates, but that's it. That's why they go in, because your chest rotates.
Not the hands are pulling in.
Pulling your hands in.
Yeah, we were really kind of at, where's that ocean where like the one color of water meets the other color of water? Mm. It's like we're kind of there in golf instruction where all this pre-measurement, these ideas that like seemed good, especially when you masterfully move the camera in certain angles where everybody looked like they were leaning forward 50 degrees and arms in and legs straight and all that. Now that we can remove the veil and actually see what's happening. So we're kind of butting up against those bad ideas. Do I keep up with that till I quit teaching, or do I actually say, no, we had this wrong. Let me go and start teaching what's actually happening. The negative of that is, the really bizarre part about that is, the no, that doesn't happen has the same data that we're all looking at. They just pretend it doesn't exist, which is bananas.
It baffles me.
Bananas.
It baffles me.
But, you know,
I think the craziest part is that you can have, like, I had a conversation, argument, whatever you want to call it, with one of the guys, and he's going, yeah, this is what, you know, all the best players put. I think he was on the far side. He's like 80% on the lead side. And I said, interesting, what are your numbers? And he says, I've never been on force plates.
There you go. It's easy to have an idea when you've never done it. I always tell everybody, you know, you just, when you measure, you're burdened by the facts.
Right.
And if you don't have the facts, you can say literally anything, especially if you convince yourself and believe it. Like it's not from a place of, you know, everyone should swing how they want to swing.
That's right.
Nobody's teaching how you want to swing. But if we're going to center the conversation around this is what good players do, then there's a burden there to be. There's a burden there
to
be realistically honest with what we're talking
about. The commonalities of the game's best players. And I've always said, I come from a scientific background. I've always said that if you can tell me why I'm wrong and why, I love it, because I have an instant opportunity to upgrade my knowledge. Instant. I can get better at teaching golf right away if you say you're wrong, here's why. And it's believable, and not just because this 2D picture looks like this.
Right.
It's not something.
I've only heard of one person. And this includes Scott Hamilton, who taught for years without measurement. I've only heard of one person ever who said I had it all right before measurement. Only one. And that person. That person. All that nonsense. But everybody else is like, I taught. When I was teaching, it was way off base.
Yep.
But it's like, I don't want to keep telling my students that weird stuff.
Yeah, I think that's the goal.
Oh, you're not the father of 3D. All right, we'll hit the last two that we have on this list pretty quickly. Okay, this one's an easy one. Okay, left shoulder down and left side bend. There's a little bit of the easy part of it is the left shoulder does not go down anywhere near as much as it goes across the body. Mm-hmm. Okay, you can just tip a hula hoop over slightly at 35 degrees or whatever kind of axis tilt you have, whatever you want to call that. And just picture, right? It's going to go across. If you rotate 90 degrees, it's only going to go across the radius of that circle. It's only going to go down as much as it's tilted, right? It would have to be tilted 90 degrees. I've made a couple snarky comments about Euclid on Twitter and stuff about this, but it's only going to go across as much. It's going to go across as much as the radius. It's only going to go down as much as you're tilted forward. You would have to literally be tilted 90 degrees to the camera to have it go across as much as it goes down. And then if you turn over 90 degrees, like Rory with his 127 degree shoulder turn or whatever, it's going back up again. So it's not, it's still going across. It's going back farther, but it's going back up again.
Yeah.
And most tour players turn over 90 degrees. John Rahm, Tony Fiedel being the exceptions there. But most tour players, their left shoulder actually starts going up again toward the end of the backswing. So we don't need measurements here. We can just use basic, simple geometry here. But the measurement stuff that we can talk about is how much a player left side tilts through their spine during the backswing. And this was something the first week that we had our academy, I was on the range saying, I think it's only like 5 or 10 degrees, guys, because like your pelvis does a lot of it. You know, your pelvis turns on a tilt, right? It's preset a little bit forward. I don't think your left side tilts 35 degrees or anything down toward the ball, like some demonstrations where you stand up, you turn 90 degrees.
I don't know. I've seen some people stand in front of 3D graphs doing that. So it's got to be accurate.
Yeah. So how much does a player left side actually tilt through the spine, Mike?
And the only way to know that is, and I wasn't even aware this was an option, is to have a 24 segment, I think it was called, 3D system of the spine. And that ain't nothing any golf coach has ever used. So it you get basically then what's called the virtual spine, right, for gears. By far, most of it comes from the pelvis. Like if you shift your the foundation of your house, the whole house is going to shift, even though the house isn't side bending, right? So by and large, and then you know, if you understand how 3D, again, not the father of 3D, but if you understand how 3D measures, and this is where it's an issue for most people. It's like, okay, if I give you an elbow bend number, I think everyone knows that that's measuring that joint bending. That's not what happens with side bend. Side bend is a reference line, right? A global reference line relative to horizon or the ground. So if I bend forward and turn, that's relative to the ground. And we've done this. We've got a video coming out where we've taken literally a bar and bend it forward and rotate it, and it produces 40 degrees or whatever the number was of side bend. And that bar physically cannot side crunch, which is what, you know, if this makes sense that it's elbow bend, right? And this makes sense that it's side bending, but it's not what it is. And that myth has been propagated, perpetuated, philosophized, the whole thing.
Promulgated.
Way, way too long. At scale, like at a national scale, that's been, at an international scale actually, has been just gotten golfers tied in knots in the backswing.
I literally had a guy though 2 days ago, and that's literally when I first time I'd ever seen him, and a guy comes in and it's just this massive reverse pivot, and this lead shoulder from his address position to the top of his backswing, like it's almost as low as his pelvis started. And I asked the guy, I'm like, well, what are you trying to do here? What are you thinking? He's like, well, I'm trying to get my lead shoulder down. Mm-hmm. I said, congratulations. Yeah, like you're doing a great job of that.
They're doing it.
And that's what's ruining though your ball striking right now, because now you got to jump up and try to back out of it so you don't stick the club 2 feet in the ground. It was very, very difficult to get this guy to understand. Let's just get that shoulder joint to just move across us. Right. Keep it higher. Let's just move it across us. And when he would do it, he's like, wow, that feels simple. I bet that has to be painful trying to get that tilt and that side bend and all, like, wow.
Yeah. Like that. Do you know the little drum from, this is going back a little bit, but Karate Kid, where he would spin the drum and it would, like, you know, do that. If you turn that forward, exactly. Tilt that forward 35 degrees and spin that, guess what? Those little balls go,
they tilt. The drums side crunch, though.
Right, that's right.
Right. Yeah, it does not side crunch unless it's broken. Now, I guess it could maybe that, do something like that. It's important
that is understood by golfers and coaches. There is some side bend, like you said.
Absolutely. Because
there's that mass thing again, yes. Right? And the spine's not the strong. It's not like a femur. So, and then there's, you know, a number of segments there. So you're going to get some movement there, but that movement is not 45 degrees or whatever we saw in those, you know, standing in front of a 3D. You know, it would have been so much clearer if you would have just shown the captures of 3D or a player standing on a fourth plate rather than these imposed images that were just bogus the day is long.
We'll talk about that a little bit more in the next podcast that we're going to record this evening. The last one's a quick and easy one. I said that about the previous one, but this one's really quick and easy. The trail knee extending. The game's best players, we both, Mike and I, and Mike has more gears captures than anybody else in the world. The trail knee, we both have captures where the trail knee bends the entire backswing in some of the game's best players. I'm not saying that's super common. It happens more often than you'd probably think. The ones that extend their trail knee, most of them extend it. Mike can correct me if I'm wrong. He has more captures than I do, but the ones I've looked at, a few hundred, extend their trail knee a few degrees, up to 5 degrees or so. I'm saying most, you know, they extend it 5 degrees or so. And most of those, by the time they reach the top of the backswing, they've returned to the same number they were at setup or a little bit more bend in the trail knee because they're into the transition with the lower body and the club. On gears, the top of the backswing is when the club changes direction. So since it's a little bit later than the lower body, they've actually returned back to having the same or slightly more bend. There are some players who extend more than that 5 degrees, but they're in a smaller minority. Is that all agreeable to you?
Yeah, I would say maybe one player, and he was in because he wasn't playing good. It's like they're not coming to see us just so we can use data on YouTube. They're coming to see us because they're either playing really good and want to get captured what they're doing, or they've got an issue. But with maybe the exception of that one player, they all add some when gears marks the top of the swing, which is when the club changes direction. So yeah, it's
right.
You know, with that push off, when you're spiking that right foot ground force, there's usually going to see a little straightening there, you know, a couple degrees, and then boom, they're putting that bend right back in. So it averages out to be about, I know, averages, we're not supposed to use average if you didn't get that memo.
But it's the middle of the window.
Because one player might hook it, one player might slice it. You can't say that the average is straight. But if 90 players all work within 4 degrees of the average, you still can't use it. But yeah, it winds up being about 6 degrees, which is the 1/2 second hand on a clock. It's 6 degrees can sound like a lot, especially if you're talking face angle. But with knee movement, starts around 20, usually gets around, or 20 is a common number, 18, 20. You're usually going to see a few more than that by the time the player gets to the top.
And so I've considered, it makes it tough to, when you extend that trail knee, you basically, the right hip or trail hip hikes up a little bit.
Yes.
It makes it really tough to gain depth, right? It makes it really easy for that left or lead knee to come in and to overturn to get thrust of the pelvis in the backswing.
Yep.
I say you turn your right leg into an axle and then everything rotates around your right ankle or your right leg. It's tougher for a lot of people. I don't love Ernie Els's golf swing. He clearly, like, I think adds a little bit of knee flex during the backswing. A lot of players that I have that come to see me who have thrust in the backswing extend that trail knee very quickly and very early in the backswing. Then they overturn, the left side swings in toward the golf ball, and they get thrust. And a lot of them will feel like they're actually almost adding flex. They're not adding a ton. They're just not extending so fast and actually almost sitting down into their right hip during the backswing a little bit.
I did a video a couple months ago, I think. It was really eye-opening for us to see it, so we just wanted to share it. From a down-the-line perspective, like gears, you've got that. You can put the center of the joint there in the knee, right? And then the trail hip joint. So not the center of the pelvis, but the trail hip. Or you can track the markers on the body, right? So we've done both, and it applies to both. So from the down-the-line perspective, and you can do, this is one of the things that you can do on 2D and get really close to seeing what happens in 3D, which everyone, all of our followers like doing that because rarely no one has 3D at home. But if you just put a dot where the center of your knee would be and the dot where your right hip would be, the good players move the hip deeper than the knee. The players that do exactly what you just described,
yep,
the knee moves deeper than the hip, and which is going to be early extension 100% of the time.
Yeah, it's almost like they just push their knee back and their right hip just almost goes up and almost toward the golf ball a little bit sometimes. I've seen that.
Yeah, and
that can, the right hip actually goes toward the golf ball.
And then you add to that, take your shoulder down, not across, and you start to see how this picture, this oil painting starts to happen. You've got minimal shoulder turn. The only thing you've got left to do then is suck those arms to the inside, which again, we find out good players. So you, in an effort to restrict one thing, that restrictive model, you start to take away or you start to add a bunch of things you have to do that good players do the opposite of. It's like, it's, I just don't understand clinging to this model when it is measurably so opposite of what good players do.
Yeah,
that's a good place to end it, I think, honestly.
I think so. I think so too. That's awesome.
Yeah, if you have any questions, if you want to pick any fights with us.
I don't think you'll have to ask. Yeah.
I like to use the word argument more like a debate or a, you know, like a lawyer's argument, just to, you know, I'm very calm when I'm discussing stuff online. Occasionally I'm chuckling at some things. I don't get upset by stuff.
Yes, let me say one more thing on that. Every swing concept should be up for debate. Mm-hmm. And
for sure.
Someone says everything that we've ever taught is stupid and wrong. That doesn't hurt my feelings or I don't get emotional about it. It's like,
no,
let's talk about why, or let's talk about why we teach that. But man, just, no, we're not attacking people. We're attacking ideas and movements that we see our players do. And just,
yeah,
man, you want the player to have the option to know there's other ways that good players move.
If we have good measurements, if the measurement system, whatever you're using, is valid and you understand how it works and maybe some limitations on it or whatever, then I regard those things as fairly factual.
Yeah.
This is how this player moved, okay? And people get very attached to opinions instead of kind of attaching themselves to facts. Mm-hmm. A little bit too often. Thank you for coming on this episode of the Spin Axis podcast. You can find us online at thespinaxis.com or on social media at the Spin Axis. Mike, where can people find you and Sean?
Probably at Taco Bell is the best place to find us, but
yeah, Baja Blast Zero.
Online, it would be athleticmotiongolf.com, YouTube, Instagram. I think it's athletic_motion_golf. Yeah. And if you find us, we'll follow you around.
Thanks, Mike.
Sounds good.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.